What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicing through topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And oh my goodness, you know, UFC Vegas 108 was, you know, pretty good for an Apex card. I do think there were some downer fights, but overall there were some bangers on this card. So today's episode, we will be covering all the fights, talking about what is next for the fighters, but that is not what stole the weekend, as WWE SummerSlam was absolutely insane. Now, I missed a majority of night one. You know, I was only able to really see highlights and other people's reviews and stuff, but I watched the entirety of night two, and let me just say, it was one of the craziest experiences I have had. That main event, that entire ending hour of SummerSlam was amazing. So also watch today's episode, and the rare occurrence, I don't know if we ever really do this, but we are actually going to be ending today's episode with my official recap of WWE SummerSlam 2025. That's how big it was. Also on today's episode, you have two new movie reviews. That is right, they aren't necessarily new movies, but Happy Gilmore 2 is fairly new, and I also finally got around to watching a Minecraft movie. That's right, I have movie reviews for both of those, and of course some new UFC fights to discuss. Yeah, it was a pretty action-packed weekend, lots of fun. I will say the only L for me this weekend is I went too big, and I absolutely killed my body, and my lower back is actually still in an immense amount of pain, but we are going to move past that and have ourselves an amazing week, and that week starts with some new UFC news. Now, nothing too major. We're actually going to start with the biggest fight that we've had announced, and this one is actually a pretty good one. I'm pumped for it. UFC Paris, presumably, I'm thinking could be the co-main event, as the number 13th ranked Benoit War, God of War, Saint Denis takes on Mauricio Rufi. And Benoit 14-3, 6-3 in the UFC. And I do want to preface that his only losses are in his debut on short notice, up in weight at 170 against Elizio Zaleski dos Santos, who couldn't put him away. Next loss, Dustin Poirier. Next loss, Renato Moicano. So, not too bad for Benoit Saint-Denis. He is still learning. He is still growing. And his finishes of Thiago Moises, Ishmael Bonfim, and most especially the Matt Frivola one are very, very good. He's coming off that win over Kyle Prepolic, which I'm going to hold him to. He could have done way better in. But here he is taking on a guy in Mauricio Rufi, who's just an absolute killer. His knockout of Bobby King Green is probably in the running for knockout of the year. It's utterly insane. Trains out of the Fighting Nerds. He's 12-1 professionally, 3-0 in the UFC. This is going to be an amazing fight. The only early analysis I do want to give for this fight is that people who are excited is that, yes, it's going to be a war, but you do have to be prepared for the fact that Benoit might just try and grapple Rufi just because he knows standing and striking with him is not going to be a smart decision. So if you see an overemphasis on grappling for BSD, then don't be too surprised, because I told you so. But this is the biggest fight that we've had announced in the last, 4 to 5 days. Keep your eyes for that one when it goes down. Next one up, women's bantamweight action, as Irina Oleksiva welcomes Bia Mesquita to the UFC at UFC Rio October 11th. We're still waiting on main events for all our October events, or our fight nights, that is, for Vancouver, for Rio. And as for Vancouver, it is rumored that Umar Nurmagomedov will be taking on Mario Bautista. But for this Rio card, I don't know anything that's going down with it. This fight will be taking place, though, at the Pharmacy Arena. Irina Oleksiva is 5-3 professionally, 1-2 in the UFC, coming off a kind of an L loss to Daria Zaletico, but just a boring defeat. But I don't know, it was Segura. She lost to Kyla Segura, actually, now that I think about it. As for Beatriz Biz Mosquito, she is 5-0, coming in, 34 years old, trains on American Top Team. She is from Brazil, so that's good. And she holds a win over, yeah, knowing that anyone would freaking know. But yeah, by looks of it, she was a champion in whatever promotion she was in before this. Might have been the LFA, so good for her. I'm definitely going to ride with her against Irina Oleksiva. Her nickname is the Russian Ronda, and she fights nothing like Ronda Rousey. I find that somewhat comical. UFC Perth on September 27th has a new fight, as Tom Nolan is back in action. The 25-year-old takes on Evan Elder. Evan Elder coming in quietly. He's almost 30, man. He's 28 years of age. He's 3-2 in the UFC. Tom is 3-1. And Tom, I do want to say wins over Bogdan Grodd, Alex Reyes, Vyacheslav Borshev. He's kind of rebounded after getting pretty much shockingly knocked out in his debut by Nicholas Mota. As for Evan, the Phenom Elder, he's 10-2 professionally. And so far in the UFC, dude has just been in dogfights. Like, it's just nothing that he can do. I do think this will be make or break for Evan. I think at 3-3, they might cut him. But as for Tom Nolan, he should be sitting pretty. And by the way, he's the hometown boy in Australia. Here's a sneaky good bantamweight matchup for UFC 320 on October 4th as Fareed Bhasharat is finally back, the undefeated Bhasharat brother, that is, as he takes on Chris Gutierrez. Chris Gutierrez, I can't even remember. The last time that he fought Chris, of course, was the man who retired Frankie Edgar, then had a main event opportunity against Song Yedong, it was. Then after that, kind of just disappeared into the realm of irrelevancy. As for Fareed Bhasharat, he's coming off a win over either Taylor LaPalooza or Devon Blackshear. I can't even remember. He's 4-0 in the UFC, 13-0 professionally. Of the two Bhasharat brothers, he is the better one, as I don't think Javid Bhasharat has woken up after being knocked out cold by Ricky Simone. So I'm going to ride with Fareed Bhasharat when this takes place. He trains out of Extreme Couture. And for Chris Gutierrez, dude is on his way out. He is now 36, I want to say he's 36 or something. He is getting up there in age for sure. Another matchup coming at you. This one for UFC Paris on that same card as BSD and Ruffy. Brad Tavares. Wow, Brad Tavares back in the action. Haven't seen him in a minute. Takes on Robert Brzyk. I can't believe Robert Brzyk is getting another go. Robert Brzyk is 35 years old and originally had fought in... Oh my goodness, who did Robert fight? He fought someone who he should have beaten, middleweight division. Oh man, this one's gonna hurt. This one's gonna hurt, guys, not remembering this one. I didn't think he was going to lose this matchup. I have no idea. I actually might have to Google this at some point later in the episode, but Brad Tavares is 16-10. He has been with the UFC since he was 5-0, so necessarily to say 10 losses in the UFC isn't too bad. Ken couldn't tell you last time he fought. I think he beat Gerald Meerschaert a couple months ago, but yeah, Brad is getting old. He's 38 years old. As for Robert, 35. Bunch of old heads going at it here. UFC Shanghai has a fun matchup for you in the welterweight division as Tailake Super Saiyan Naraji, who's 11-1, makes his UFC debut against Kiefer Crosby. Yes, Kiefer Crosby is 0-2 in the UFC. Tailake is replacing Song Ki-Nong. And let me just tell you, yeah, Tailake has a scary look to him. He is going to massacre Kiefer Crosby. That one I'm actually a little pumped for. Another one for you, this one in the featherweight division for UFC Shanghai, Yizha, who lost his UFC debut but has a professional record of 25-5. He's only 28 years old. Takes on Weston Wilson. Weston Wilson somehow finished Jack Asaragai. Weston Wilson, also of his 17 wins, has 17 finishes. It makes absolutely no sense. But dude has no chin. So I do want to say this man has zero chin ability. So if Yizha is going to win, he's going to knock him out. And one last fight to give you guys, UFC Noche, of course, going down in San Antonio September 13th. Alessandro Costa is back with a 2-2 UFC record and wins over Kevin Borjas and Jimmy Flick as he takes on the debuting Alden Cobra Correa, who will be replacing Edgar Chavez. Alden coming in, he's 27 years old, so doesn't really win over anyone notable. 10-3, good for him. Alessandro Costa should probably get this done, but you never know. Short-nosed fighters are always sneaking in, picking up wins here and there. It's been an action-packed year in the UFC. But those are all your new UFC fights to keep on your radar. Obviously, BSD and Ruffy is the biggest one, and I don't even know if we're going to be getting too many coming up. You know, August is pretty much booked. You know, I'm actually still surprised we're getting August fights being announced. So, good stuff overall. We'll give this new updates a little thumbs up. You know, there have been insane ones. I mean, when they drop 321 and 320, we're not going to get that every single week. And I tell you what else we're not going to get every single week, and that is a sequel to one of the best, if not the best, Adam Sandler movies in Happy Gilmore. That is right. Happy Gilmore 2 recently went down, and I watched it. I watched it last week, and I have my thoughts. Certainly have my thoughts. So for starters, IMDb has it at a 6.2 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes has 62%. I think after sitting on it for a bit, a 6 out of 10 is where I'm comfortable giving this a score. And by the way, the first one is like an 8 out of 10 movie. It's so lovable. This movie does have an 86% Google users rating, but Google users always have higher ratings for their things. The official synopsis of this film is Gilmore returns to the sport of golf since his retirement after winning his first tour championship to finance his daughter's ballet classes. I mean, the entire plot of this movie is just insane. So it opens and they just kill, they kill his wife off. He kills his wife by hitting her with a golf ball. It is like, I'm watching, I'm just like, did that just happen? Like, Lexi looked down for a second and she's like, what do you mean, like, his wife just died? I'm like, yes, Claire from Modern Family is freaking dead. She's absolutely dead. Goodbye, Julie Bowen. You are a goner. And after that, you then see his kids. And by the way, his kids, MJF and Carl from what's the show that Carl was in? Oh my gosh, it was on Stars. Oh, Ethan Kotowski is Shameless. Shameless. It is Carl from Shameless is one of his kids. And this cast, by the way, is utterly insane. Utterly insane. Just read through some of the cast members here. Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny is in it. He plays a waiter, and Bad Bunny steals the show. He is so funny. He then becomes Adam Sandler's caddy. Eminem has the weirdest cameo I've ever seen. He plays the guy who was heckling Happy Gilmore in the first film, his son, and he literally gets brutally eaten by alligators, and everyone's cheering, and I'm like, what is going on? Travis Kelce is a waiter in this. He's somewhat comedic. John Daly plays just the weirdest role in this. I mean, I don't know. He does cast both of his daughters in here. I will say I did like Sadie's performance a bit more as someone helping out with him in rehab. That's right, he's going to rehab, and guess who's running rehab? Hall L. Ben Stiller's character, who at the end of the film gets chased out by the FBI. I mean, this is the most ridiculous thing. The most ridiculous thing. Benny Safdie plays the villain Frank Manatee. Benny Safdie, I had to look him up because I'm like, who is this guy? He's so familiar. He was in Uncut Gems. He's going to be in the upcoming Smashing Machine movie. He was in Oppenheimer. He's going to be in The Odyssey. He has been in a lot of good films. So he played a pretty good villain here, pretty dumb villain. I mean, we don't have to sugarcoat around it. It was super dumb. The Maxi Golf League was just so stupid. I saw a lot of people were complaining about this movie is that it was going okay, and then it got to the Maxi Golf League, and it just threw all logic out the window, and it kind of did. I don't really think it ruined the movie, because the movie was already just, like, super dumb off the bat, but, I mean, it certainly was kind of goofy. I mean, the entire premise here was that they learned that if you take out, like, some spinal arrangement in your hips, then you can hit the ball longer, so that everyone's just, like, having this weird form to hit the ball longer. It was so dumb. You did have some golfers in this. Roy McIlroy, Scotty Scheffler, they were hilarious in this. I'm trying to think, you also had Bryson Chambeau. And Bryson Chambeau, I think, was they did some weird thing where, like, Bryson Chambeau was playing Scotty Scheffler. That's what it officially says in the credits. I have no idea why it says that. Post Malone was on here. Vern Lundquist was in this film. I mean, holy cow. Holy cow. A lot of people. A lot of freaking... Marcelo Hernandez was in this as Esteban. That's right, the guy who does the skits on SNL. I mean, oh my gosh. Just so goofy. Just so freaking goofy. One of my favorite roles was Shooter McGavin. And this Shooter McGavin kind of had this character redemption arc from the first film. And he was in a psych ward to kick things off. Then he is able to, like, get a release. And then he goes and joins Happy Gilmore. It was goofy. Now, was there any need for this sequel to be made? No. There was literally no need. No one was asking for Happy Gilmore 2. And yet they still go out and made it. So, what are we going to do? Just go and trash on it? No. It was goofy. It was dumb. It was nowhere near as good as the predecessor. It was an excuse for Adam Sandler to get all of his friends together. Which, by the way, he only was able to get, like, a couple of his friends in this film. And to just have a bunch of celebrity cameos. Netflix definitely gave him a lot of money. I think he made, like, 200 mil for this film or something. So, it gets a 6 out of 10 for me. It is not as bad as everyone's saying, but if anyone says this is a good movie, they will be highly mistaken, because it is nowhere near good at all. But I'll tell you what is absolutely amazing. It is a art of cinema. It is the greatest movie of all time. It is a Minecraft movie. That's right. I thought it was called The Minecraft Movie. It's called A Minecraft Movie. 5.6 out of 10 IMDb, 48% Rotten Tomatoes. I'm actually going to give it 6.2. That is right. It was so dumb. it was so, like, Ikea, this was one of the dumbest movies I've ever watched, and I found myself laughing at scenes, and I'm like, why am I laughing at this? And all the memes you've seen online, seeing them in the film when he goes, flint and steel, or la la lava, chicken, and then, of course, chicken jockey. Oh my gosh, I was geeking. It was so stupid. I shouldn't have been geeking, but I absolutely was. It's pretty much a short cast here. Jason Momoa plays this character called Garrett the Garbage Man Gerritsen, and he basically was like a 1989 champion in a video game and just never left the 80s. He just never left the 80s, and that's his character throughout the whole film. And he's so dumb. He plays this brain head, just jacked guy who still thinks he's in the 80s. So funny. Jack Black is Steve. They didn't even like give Jack Black a thing. I think they just said, do whatever you want in these scenes and just be goofy. He's doing accents. He's saying things in weird tones. He's just being so dumb, and it was hilarious. Emma Myers and Sebastian Eugene Hansen, they play these brothers, Natalie and Henry. And Henry's kind of this kid, you know, he's probably the stereotypical kid that would play Minecraft, you know, someone who likes doing creative stuff, kind of a nerd, kind of has a lisp. And it's kind of in this Minecraft world, he's able to be a hero and kind of take control of things and save the day from the evil Malgosha and all the pigs or whatever from the nether. And I really like that. And, you know, Nellie's just the comforting older sister, and, you know, they're moving to a new town, and yeah, just good stuff there. Jennifer Coolidge falls in love with a a villager. She falls in love with a villager who wanders into the real Earth timeline, which I found so, so weird. And then Daniel Brooks is also in here. And I'm trying to think what else Daniel Brooks was in. She was in Peacemaker. That's what it was. Also in Orange is the New Black, The Purple Color, the Angry Birds movie. Yeah, she was pretty good in this one too. But yeah, the entire premise of this movie is that these evil pigs are trying to take over the overworld or the Minecraft world, and everyone's trying to, you know, everyone gets sucked in, and they have to go save the day, and they all got to reunite. And yeah, is it stupid? Is it dumb? Yes, but guess what? It's enjoyable. It's enjoyable. Here's a synopsis for you. A mysterious portal pulls four misfits into the overworld, a bizarre cubic wonderland that thrives on imagination. To give Echo himself to master the terrain while embarking on a magical quest with an unexpected crafter named Steve. They make this sound so official. I absolutely love that. It is nowhere near as official as that title, but I do hope that they run it back. I would love to see I'd love to see that. I think it would be great if you made this a sequel, a series. I mean, a 4.2 out of 5 audience rating. Absolutely life unchanging, says this review. From the moment the opening scene lit up the screen, I knew a Minecraft movie was going to be something truly special. As a longtime fan of the game, I went in with high hopes. Boy, I experienced this beyond anything I could have ever imagined. Okay, we're just going to leave that there. It's not that good, but a Minecraft movie, I say watch it. Just watch it. I mean, if you need a dumb movie to watch, check it out. It is hilarious. Trust me, it is such an hilarious movie. But I'll tell you what wasn't hilarious. That was UFC Vegas 108 as it happened. It went down. And for an Apex card, I'll tell you, I've seen way worse. This one wasn't too bad. Main card certainly had some bangers on it. But we're going to go through the whole card. We did go 8-4 on predictions. So we're now over 200 on the year. And we are only 2 predictions away from being plus 100. We are 206 and 108, so we're almost there. Pretty good on predictions. I'll talk about what I missed on and what I could have hit on, but yes, let's dive right on into it. So, for starters, women's strawweight action to kick off the card. Piera Rodriguez and Ketlyn Souza. Piera was the favorite. I thought Ketlyn had it in her, but no, Piera Rodriguez gets the split decision victory here, and the verdict scorecard did have it pretty even. Round 1 was a Piera Rodriguez round. Round 2 was the swing round, and round 3 went to Ketlyn Souza. From stuff I'm seeing, I don't really know. Everyone was all over the place, but Piera Rodriguez picks up the victory. 64 significant strikes to 56, 7 of 10 on takedowns for 4.5 minutes of control time. For landing 7 takedowns and only having 4.5 minutes, that is not really a good telltale sign, but she also did outstrike Ketlyn in every single round significantly. For total strikes, Ketlyn had more in round 1 and round 3, but I guess we're getting taken down 7 times. It will kind of lean the judges that way. So, good win for Piera Rodriguez. She'll improve to 11-2 and is now on a 2-fight winning streak after being on a 2-fight losing streak. So, good stuff for Piera Rodriguez. Do you think they're going to throw her to the rankings? I don't know. You never know with this division. They might. You know, the women's, where did this take place at? Women's strawweight, perhaps? Yeah, it did happen at women's strawweight. I saw someone suggest Amanda Hemus go down in weight, but I don't know if Vera Rodriguez is going to get as big a name of someone like, per se, Amanda Hemus. I just don't really see that. I just don't. She's ranked number 10. If they give anyone in the rankings, it'd probably be Loma Luke Boonmi. But even that, I mean, I'm not really sold on her fighting anyone ranked right now. Okay, now, Kaitlyn Souza, you know, this was a tough loss. Her other losses are also Karine Silva and Angela Hill. You know, I'll say that. A name I would kind of like to see Pierre fight would be Yasmin Jeraguay. Yasmin Jeraguay lost to Kaitlyn Souza, but Yasmin Jeraguay is also an absolute killer, so that could be an option. Or even Denise Gomez could be someone. But yeah, open up the card, kind of a slower-paced matchup. I'll say nothing too exciting, run-of-the-mill decision. What could be next for Kaitlyn? I don't know. How about Josephine Knutson, the last woman Pierre Rodriguez fought? Someone else suggested Fatima Klein. Yeah. You know, it is what it is, but that matchup happened. It went by. That was that. There's literally nothing more to talk about for this card. For this fight, I should say. For the card, we have much more to talk about, because after that, we had a flyweight bout between Rafael Estevam and Felipe Buñez. And, of course, it was supposed to be Andre Lima versus Felipe Buñez, but Andre Lima had to pull out instead. 29-28, Rafael Estevam remains undefeated. This guy is now 14-0. He's 3-0 in the UFC, and he has grappled his way to victory. 3 UFC fights, 18 total takedowns. That is right, 10 minutes and 42 seconds of control time on 5 of 9 on takedowns. Rafael just grapples Felipe Buñez to death. 33 significant strikes for Estevam, 25 for Felipe, 128 total strikes for Estevam, only 38 for Buñez. Round 1, 2 minutes 48 seconds of control time. Round 2, 4 minutes and 1 second of control time. And round 3, 3 minutes and 53 seconds of control time. They did give Felipe Buñez one round. I don't even know what round that was. It could have been 3 because he landed more significant strikes. Also could have been 1 because it was much more competitive. But yeah, Estevam gets it done. As for Buñez, he's now 1-2 in the UFC. What do we do next with these guys? Well, Andre Lima was originally supposed to fight Felipe Buñez. You also have someone we talked about earlier, Edgar Schrez, having to pull out of a fight. So either Andre Lima, a rematch, just run that back, or you could have Edgar Schrez step in. I like both those. Personally, I lean more towards the Andre Lima fight. As for Estevam, you know, 14-0, flyweight, 3-0 in the company, you're going to be close to a ranked opportunity. You really are. And there's a couple names, you know, that could come to mind here. You know, I don't really know. I don't really know how far I want to throw him up. You know, Alex Perez, I don't know if he's really ready for someone super high in the rankings. Maybe if Tim Elliott loses to Kai Sakura, we could test Estevam with Tim Elliott, but it's tricky to say. Someone else suggested Andre Lima fight Rafael Estevam, but two undefeated guys fighting each other? Nah, I can't really get behind that. We did talk about some other flyweight bout that was going down earlier. What was that? Was it, oh yeah, it was Alessandro Costa taking on a debuting guy. Let's have the winner of that take on Estevam. They're all from Brazil, so I don't know if they train at the same gym, but yeah, you could just make that fight happen. And after that, we had our first finish of the night, and since there were two fight of the nights on this card, the first ever, I think, two fight of the nights, they didn't give out a single performance bonus, which was kind of disappointing, because I feel like almost every finish you could have given out a performance bonus, as Austin Bashee makes easy work of John Yanis. I knew this would happen. You know, I knew Estevam would win, and I was almost positive that Bashee would get this one done. He was a massive favorite, and he gets his 6th career submission and his 9th career finish, improves to 14-1, and the Christian Rodriguez loss has now aged pretty well, because he's just gone out and dominated, what's his face, John Yanis. I mean, the fight lasted 3 minutes 39 seconds. 3 minutes of it was Austin Bashee controlling him. I mean, Austin literally went across the cage, took him down, started laying on him with some little ground and pound. I mean, 2 significant strikes, 48 total strikes in the span. Locks in a rear naked choke standing, and that was that. John Yanis is forced to tap him. You know, John, tough defeat. You know, though the other previous time he had ever been finished was by submission, and that was clearly exposed here by Austin Bashee. Will they bring back John Yanis? I would say no. I do not think John Yanis is ready at all for the, you know, big stage of the UFC, so I think John Yanis back to the independent scene. But Austin Bashee, featherweight division, I like him. I really like this kid. He's young. He's 23. Someone threw out the name Yader Del Val. I would not like to see that, as Yader's an absolute killer. But Christian Rodriguez has a fight coming up with Andre Feely. If Andre Feely loses that, Andre Feely versus Austin Bashir. I would just like that. I think that would be a super fun fight. You could even do Julian Arosa versus Austin Bashir. You could do Isaac Dalgarian versus Austin Bashir. Austin Bashir is going to be having a very, very successful UFC career. I just have a feeling. I got a feeling that this kid's going to be something. I really do. I love to matchmake on the same card, and Danny Silva lost earlier. We're going to mention his fight in just a coming up, and I think Danny Silva versus Austin Bashir. You could just run that. So, good stuff from Austin Bashir as he finally gave us a finish. After that, we had middleweight action between Andre Puliev and Nick Klein, and let me just say, neither of these guys belong in the UFC, and I was so happy here. Nick Klein went out. He took down Andre 3 times in round one, controlled him for 4 minutes. I thought he was going to get a submission. Then he completely gassed out 90 seconds into round two. He gets brutally knocked out by Andre Puliev. The kicks to the body were vicious. He fell down and ate some nasty ground and pound, and that was that. Chris Tyone said, okay, stop this. This is embarrassing. So yeah, Andre Puliev gets the finish. A little disappointed in Nick. He had this fight on lock and completely lost it. Andre Puliev, though, getting his 6th career knockout, his 8th career finish, and thankfully for him, his first UFC victory. 10-3 now, 1-1 in the company. You know, it's tough to say in the middleweight division. It really is tough. You know, there's a lot of options. Him fighting Cody Brundage is like just, I feel like it writes itself as like two perfect goofy guys that could go at it. I would also say Trayshawn Gore if they keep Trayshawn Gore, but yeah, good stuff for Andre Puliev. The round two knockout is what he needed. As for Nick Klein, 0-2 in the UFC, finished in round two in both of them after having mediocre round ones. Yeah, I think Nick Klein needs to head to the independent scene or else he's going to be fed to one of the up-and-coming Dana White's Contender Series fighters from this new series. But this guy has no place in the UFC right now. Nick Klein, head to the independent scene for a bit, improve, and come back even stronger. After that, we stayed in the middleweight division as Rodolfo Vieira took on Trayshawn Gore. First off, biggest shocker here, this went the distance. I did not think this was going to go the distance at all. And to make matters even more shocking, Rodolfo Vieira stood with Trayshawn Gore this entire time preparing. Now, he did go 1 of 14 on takedowns, so Trayshawn was in his bag defending takedowns. But other than that, 89 significant strikes to 41, 96 total strikes to 50. Yeah. That'll do it. So Rodolfo, round one, lands a takedown, does that. But then round two, fails 3 takedowns, outstrikes him 36 to 14 significantly. Round three, fails on 4 takedown attempts, outstrikes him 38 to 16. So Rodolfo Vieira, since transitioning to the Fighting Nerds gym, certainly finding a bit more at-homeness with his standing and striking, which is what he needed. He truly, really needed this to improve with the UFC and remain a threat if he was ever going to be a threat. He'll improve to 11-3, and he's had this the most random run in the UFC, but somehow he's 6-3. I mean, good for him. Really, really good stuff for Rodolfo Vieira as he defeats Trayshawn Gore. As for what's next for him, someone threw out the name Bo Nickel. Maybe. Maybe you could do Bo Nickel. I don't really know. If anything, Andre Puliev versus Rodolfo Vieira, they're on the same card. I like matchmaking that way. You also do, I think Marco Tullio has a fight coming up with Michelle Pereira. Maybe the loser of that. I don't really know what to do with Rodolfo Vieira. He's going to be remaining a threat in the company. But I will say, you know, at 35 years old, now's the time to make a run. He's going to try and make a run. So we'll see if he can do it. I do like the Bo Nickel fight. I think that would be a big opportunity for him. It also is a good bounce back fight for Bo Nickel. So you could make that and I wouldn't complain whatsoever. Now, what to do with Trayshawn Gore? He is now 6-4. He's 2-4 in the UFC. Do we keep him? Do we keep him in the UFC? And if so, what do you do with him? I don't really know. You know, his losses are Brian Battle, Cody Brundage, Marco Tullio, and Rodolfo Vieira. You know, there's some tough guys in there, but his only wins are Antonio Tricoli and Josh Fremd, who are no longer in the UFC. So I think that says a lot more about the abilities of Trayshawn Gore than anything else. So Trayshawn, I mean, he's 31. It's not impossible he could leave, find some success, but 6-4 in 10 fights, I think this is it for Trayshawn. I think Trayshawn's got to go. I thought this guy was going to win the Ultimate Fighter. I was mistaken. He kind of made a comeback with his 2 submission wins, but as of 2025, 0-2, has only won one round on one judge's scorecard. Yeah, that's not going to cut it at all. So bye-bye, Treshawn Gore. But Rodolfo Vieira, good freaking work. With that, we dove into our final prelim. I thought it was going to be the second-to-last prelim, so my bad on main card picks. But yeah, Renga Nakamura. Nathan Fletcher only lasted a minute and 2 seconds. Renga Nakamura is so freaking back. That is right. I mean, these two going at it. Then Renga rips a beautiful kick to the body. Down goes Nathan Fletcher. 1, 2, 3 follow-up shots. That is that. Renga Nakamura, you absolute beauty. I thought he'd get a submission here. No. How about a round one knockout? Beautiful stuff from Renga. His 6th career knockout. Good stuff for Nakamura. And 10-1 now, and he has rebounded beautifully since losing to Muin Gafurov in January of this year. He is now 4-1 in the UFC. Good stuff coming from the road to the UFC. Yeah, this guy's an absolute savage. Good stuff for Renga. And yeah, right back in the mix. We don't need to sugarcoat it. I mean, Kyler Phillips just got dominated by Vincenzo Oliveira. I could see them giving him to Kyler Phillips. That would be absolutely insane. Sadiq Magomedov and Bryce Mitchell, those are two names you could throw in as well. I mean, I like them. I really like this kid. Renga Nakamura is a savage. He brings it every time, and if he's fighting, you know I'm interested as hell. Someone else, you go, he can maybe take on is Kellen Lorraine. He's someone who just beat Nathan Fletcher recently. I always love doing that. It's easy to matchmake those, but for Renga, bask in your glory now. You are back in the win column, my brother. Should have got a performance bonus for this. This was a quick, easy finish. I wish he would have gotten one. As for Nathan, he's now 1-2 in the UFC, 9-3 professionally. He's 27, so kind of green. I suppose they could invite him back, but I don't know. Someone on the come up, someone of lesser abilities, and I don't really know who that is. I really don't. You know, Carlos Vera, Fern Garcia, Toshabi Kazama, I don't know. Nathan Fletcher, really going to need to figure something out. Someone even threw out the name on Verdict MMA as I was looking and taking on Chris Moutinho. Chris Moutinho, of course, the guy who has been brutally knocked out by Sean O'Malley, brutally knocked out by Malcolm Wallmaker. You could maybe do that. I would really do that. But Nathan, we'll see if they keep you. Renga Nakamura, the rankings are heading your way. With that, we dove into the main card, and Kevin Vallejos got things kicked off with Danny Silva, and props to Danny Silva, stood in there, 8 shots, and managed to go the distance with a tough guy in Kevin Vallejos. But Kevin, of course, gets this one done. To no one's surprise, Kevin Vallejos gets the victory and went the distance for the first time in a long time, which is really good when gaining experience. 5-fight winning streak now, 2-0 in the company, bang, that's what you do. Kevin proves the 16-1, and you know, featherweight division, you can get big fights now when you win matchups like this one. Someone was saying Joe Anderson Brito. I really like that. I really do like that. You could also do William Gomez if you wanted. You could do, Nate Landwehr. Yeah, Nate Landwehr would give Kevin Vallejos an absolute dogfight. You got a lot of options, Kevin, but, you know, for this one, making Argentina proud, good freaking work. As for Danny Silva, yeah, this one sucks, Danny. I can't lie. You were on a 4-fight winning streak. You now suffer a defeat. But like I said, Danny Silva taking on Austin Bashi could be a good fight for both of them. Danny Silva is coming in with a, 28-year-old standing, so kind of tough there. Kevin Vallejos is 23, much more younger, much more on the come up. 90 significant strikes to 69. Kevin got it done there. Also landed 2 takedowns, but got like no control time, so that really didn't impact the fight whatsoever. Good stuff for Kevin. He'll be on his way to the rankings before he knows it. He is a dominant force. Following that, we got back to our finishing ways as Neil Magny took on Elizioski dos Santos. And Neil Magny, 2025, is out here getting knockouts. I love it. I freaking love it. I knew Neil Magny would get this one done. He gets his 9th career knockout. Can you believe that? Neil Magny has been fighting for so long. He has a 30-14 record. That is right. His 30th career win, and it is only his 13th career finish. He is a decision merchant, but first win since January of 2024, and beautiful work. Beautiful work from Neil Magny here, and kind of dominating. Elizio, you know, he dealt with some stuff. Elizio took him down twice, you know, 4 minutes, 40 seconds control time. That sucks. That really does, but gets in round 2, bounces back for round one, hits him with a nasty knee. I mean, oh my gosh, discombobulating Lazio with just, I mean, Lazio's Alexis Dos Santos. His weakness is clearly knees now. We clearly know that, but hits him with the knee. He doesn't even know where he's at, goes to the ground, lands some beautiful follow-up punches from top mount, and bang, that is that. Neil Magny, you beautiful bastard. Good freaking work. Good work, Neil Magny. Happy for you. Happy for you, man. And, you know, I would have given him a performance bonus if I could have, because it's always nice to see the veterans get a finish. And this would actually be the last finish for the main event, so that's what I really like about this one. Alexio Celestino Dos Santos, let's start with this guy. Two-fight losing streak. Both of them knocked out by a knee, basically. He also is 1-3 with a draw in his last five. Very odd. Very odd. I don't know if we should keep him. You know, this guy is 38 years old. It might be time to retire, but if he wants to build up a young up-and-coming talent, Jonathan Milcaf, you know, in Perth could be an option. But yeah, there isn't really much I can suggest for you, Elizio. There really isn't much here. I'm sorry. As for Neil, you know, there's always a name that comes to mind. I don't know how they haven't fought yet, but Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland's coming off a loss, too. I think it just writes itself. They haven't fought each other. They should. Neil Magny, Kevin Holland, let's just book him. Let's just book it. I mean, we're not losing anything by not booking it. So there you are. Neil Magny, Kevin Holland, make it a matchup. After that, women's bantamweight action, Nora Cornoli, Carol Rosa, and I was hoping Nora Cornoli could make the jump, and she clearly couldn't make the jump as she loses. Yeah, just gets grappled to death, and it sucked. It sucked. It sucked any energy we had out of the arena. It really was. It was boring. 11.5 minutes of control time. That'll do it. 190 total strikes landed for Carol Rosa. Just little shots. Little shots. I mean, Nora Cornoli landed zero significant strikes in round number two. Held out for 4 minutes and 53 seconds. I mean, she was literally taken down 7 seconds in. Could never get back up. So, Carol Rosa, good stuff. First win since August of 2024. She has gone win-loss since October of 2021. Can you freaking believe that? Win-loss. Huh. Carol, you boring lady. What do we do next with her? I don't know. Irene Aldana? Yana Santos? I mean, it doesn't even matter. It's just boring. Just boring. So, is Irene Aldana coming off a win? I can't even recall. Whoever's coming off a loss in the top 10, she can fight. Yeah, Irene Aldana lost to Norma Dumont. Yeah, let's do Irene Aldana versus Carol Rosa, because why not? Unless we want to build up another talent. If we could give Daria Zelenikova an opportunity, what? Or maybe if Bea McCosta, whoever's taking on the Russian Ronda we mentioned earlier on today's episode, think if she could take on her if she wins. I don't know, but this fight sucked. We don't even need to sugarcoat it all. This was boring. This was so boring. Nora Cornoli now having her little win streak snapped. Oh no, poor Nora. Oh boohoo. 9-3 now. Sitting at 3-2 in the UFC. What did Verdict suggest? Verdict suggested that she take on Daria Zelenikova. Oh, they want her to take on Daria Zelenikova. How about Misha Tate? Nora Cornoli, Misha Tate. That's the fight I want to make. And we're not going to give them any more time because this fight was an absolute bloodsucker. But after that boringness, after the dullness of, you know, the card wasn't too bad up to this point, but we get into the big three. You know, on every card, there's always either a big four fights, big three fights, big two fights. Sometimes it's just the main event's the biggest fight. But here it was three matchups that were all pointed out. Two lightweight bangers and a banger flyweight main event. And I'm just going to kind of, you know, put together both of our lightweight matchups here into one big lightweight puddle here. Because Esteban Rijovic, Elvis Brenner, and Chris Tucker, Matheus Rebecca were both fight of the night. The first ever two double fight of the nights. These were both absolute wars. Absolute wars here. Esteban and Elvis Brenner. I thought Elvis was out of there in round one. I mean, the amount of times that Rebovic had him wobbled was insane. Rebovic's 39 seven strikes to 36 in round one. Elvis switches it in round two, 48 to 34. Esteban ends it 49 significant strikes to 34. The totals 122 to 118 significant strikes for Elvis Brenner versus Esteban Rijovic. Both men land 123 exact total strikes. Elvis goes 0-9 on takedowns, and Esteban doesn't allow a single second of control time to be landed on him. This was absolutely legendary, and I have no idea how either of these two guys were standing. Chris Duncan, Matheus Rebecca, the upset. I cannot believe Chris Duncan beat Matheus Rebecca, and I thought this was game over. Matheus Rebecca was dominating him in round number one, 32 significant strikes to 19, had a minute of control time. Round two comes around. Matus lands more, does land a takedown, only gets 19 seconds control time, but the damage Duncan was landing was insane. I mean, Matus Ubeke's face looked like a child that had just been playing with a tomato. It was insane. Round three, 48 significant strikes to 44. Chris Duncan lets it all out, and then Matus Ubeke, he'd be getting absolutely leveled on, and then he just fired back a big shot. It was utterly insane. The tale of these two fights, I will say, is that Chris Duncan lands less shots, but lands them more sharp, more quick, and more painful. Matus Ubeke is all about pace, all about pressure, and he really put it on Chris Duncan. Esteban Elvis Brenner, I mean, they just went to war. I mean, Elvis freaking Brenner trains with Charles Oliveira. He has that dog in him, and that's for Esteban making Argentina proud. This was utterly insane. If you ask me what you want to do with both these guys, winners fight, losers fight. That's what I think you should do. Now, verdict said Elvis Brenner should take on Terrence McKinney. I think that would be a super fun fight. Verdict also said Esteban Rivik should take on Ludwig Klein. Would be a good fight. They said Chris Duncan versus Ignacio Bahomides and Matus Ubeke versus Nazim Sadikov. I think all those are great options, but I think having these just four match up again, you know, Chris Duncan now is on a 3-fight winning streak, 2 submissions, and a fight of the night. Dude's an absolute legend. He is also 5-1 in the UFC. Chris Duncan is legit at 27 years. Actually, how old is Chris Duncan? Is he 27? How old is Chris Duncan here? 32. At 32. Dude is still legit. Only loss in the UFC is to Manuel Torres. As for Matus Ubeke, you know, the dude is, you know, he's good, 4-2 in the UFC, and his losses to Diego Ferreira and Chris Duncan, I mean, his last 3 fights have all been wars. I mean, Diego Ferreira and him went to battle. Mike McGorlby and him had a fight of the year contender last year, and Chris Duncan versus Matus Ubeke was utterly insane. These two are probably going to tie for fight of the month in August. I mean, I don't even know what could top these two fights. Utterly insane. Now, as for the winners, I mean, Esteban Ribovic, dude's a dog. For the other fight, I should say. Esteban Ribovic, 3 straight fights, 3 fight of the nights, insane. Insane, and by the way, everyone knows he should not have lost that Nasrat Haqparast fight. So he's really 4-1 in his last 5, should be on a 5-fight winning streak. I do want to preface that. As for Elvis Brenner, he's on a 3-fight losing streak, but let's not hold it against him. His opponents, Mike Bekorobai, Joel Alvarez, and Esteban Rivik. So, my opinion, I love matchmaking on the same cards, and especially for this case where you have 2 fight of the nights on the same card, Chris Duncan versus Esteban Rivik, Matus Ubeke versus Elvis Brenner, book those fights. Give them to me. With that, we dove into the main event of the evening, Tatsuro Taira versus Hung Sung Park. You know, I knew Tatsuro would dominate him, but it was just another thing. I actually watched Tatsuro just make the easiest work of Hung Sung Park ever. I almost felt bad. Round one, we get things going. He drops him with, like, the second punch he lands. I mean, just a beautiful straight. Tatsuro then takes him down twice to end out that round. 4 minutes of control time, 10-8. 10-8 in round one for Tatsuro Taira. Kept trying to set up a submission. Round two, goes across the cage, takes him down 15 seconds in, just grapples him to death, and then submits him with a neck crank from back control. Nasty work. Tatsuro Taira gets it done. And that'll be Tatsuro Taira's 8th career submission, his 13th career finish. He improves to 17-1. And by the way, 25 years old, debuted not even 4 years ago. Pardon that. He debuted 3 years ago. 3 freaking years ago. He's 7-1 in the UFC. What in the world? Tatsuro Taira, you absolute beauty. He's ranked number 6. Kakar Krantz is at 5. I would easily move him past KKF to number 5. Who's next for him? Amir Albazi at 4. I say you just run back that fight. Amir Albazi is coming off of decision losses to Brandon Moreno. Actually, I think it is. He's just coming off that loss to Brandon Moreno. Let's just run this fight back if Amir Albazi can't get healthy. And ultimately, if Amir can't get healthy, I would love to see him fight Brandon Moreno, or even best case scenario, run back that Brandon Rival fight, because he is definitely ready to get his lick back. But Tatsuro versus Amir is probably my prediction of what I would want next. Dominant work from Tatsuro Taira. He's definitely going to be the first Japanese-born flyweight champion, I can guarantee. As for Hung Sung Park, you know, you feel somewhat bad, but 10-1, you know, this was a massive step up from fighting Carlos Hernandez and Shannon Ross, so do want to give him a bit of leeway. You know, there's a lot you could go from here. For Hung Sung Park, I do want to say another undefeated fighter loses their you know, it is pretty funny to see. This guy's also never been the distance since his first professional UFC fight. I mean, Hung Sung Park, someone threw out the name Jose Ochoa. Could be a fun name. Didn't know Jose Ochoa just fight? I swore Jose Ochoa just fought. Did he fight last weekend or something? When did Jose Ochoa last fight? Am I tripping? Maybe he fought Usyk Mabayev. Yeah, Jose Ochoa lost to Usyk Mabayev. Yeah, let's do Jose Ochoa versus Jung Sung Park. You could also do Azat Maksum versus Jung Sung Park. Andre Lima, Rafael Estevam, if we want to do the same card. You know, there's a lot of options to do with this guy. So, I do Estevam, honestly. Estevam, Jung Sung Park. Let's make that matchup. Let's book it. But Tetsuya Taira, he's going to be in a main event, hopefully, in the end of the year. You know, I hope that they can get him another fight booked, but the dude is an absolute savage and made easy work. The fight lasted 6 minutes and 6 seconds, 4 minutes, 41 seconds control time for Tetsuya Taira. He only needed 7 significant strikes landed to get this done. I mean, man, Tetsuya Taira, been one of my favorite fighters since he entered the UFC, and he still is one of my favorite fighters. But with that, we move on from UFC Vegas 108, which was a success. I'll say, when I look at the card overall as a whole, you know, of the 12 matchups, I will give 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'll give it an 8 out of 4. 8 out of 4. So 8 out of 12 will give us 4 out of 6, 2 out of 3. So it gets a 66%, which is good. Good for a card. You know, I'll just say pretty much every decision that wasn't the final two kind of sucked, unless it was you were getting a knockout. But, you know, we can't complain. Two fight of the nights. Main event ends in a finish. Neil Magny gets a KO. Ringo Nakamura gets a KO. Austin Machine gets a submission. Good stuff at the office. But we do go back to the Apex for one last event for the foreseeable future. You know, out until the end of October, we know we are not going to be in the Apex. So this will be our final card in the Apex till minimum November. And I've heard no rumors of a UFC Vegas 110 in November. But next weekend, coming up actually in 5 days, Roman Dolidze versus Anthony Hernandez in the main event. Anthony Hernandez riding a big win streak now. He's ranked number 10. As for Dolidze, he's bounced his way back after suffering defeats to now be ranked number 9. So winner of this will move up into the top 10. Steve Hirsig also will be taking on Ode Osborne on short notice. And the fact Ode Osborne could go to the number 10 ranked spot in the men's flyweight division will be absolutely insane. Yasmin Lucindo is also back in action as she takes on Angela Hill. Christian Rodriguez, he looks to snap his prospect only wins against Andre Feely in a banger. G Matsumoto is back after suffering his first special defeat against a tough guy in Miles Jones. Christian Leroy Duncan back to take on a tough guy in Eric Anders. Julius Walker and Rafael Sakura battle to see who will not be cut from the UFC. Elijah Smith is back. Jocelyn Edwards and Priscilla Cash. Way to have a fun women's bantamweight matchup. Gilbert Urbina looks to get avoided getting knocked out by Uros Medic, and the two best upsetters in women's flyweight history, Gabrielle Fernandez and Julia Storylenko, run into each other in excellent faction. We are going to make this card fun. We'll be covering it later in the week. UFC Vegas 109. I shall see you later. But yeah, overall, good stuff. And after that, I mean, it is just greed bashers ahead. Greed bashers ahead. UFC 319, UFC Shanghai, UFC Paris, UFC Noche, UFC Perth, a UFC 320, a UFC Vancouver, a UFC Rio, a UFC 320. Yeah, I can just go on. September and October are going to be utterly legendary. But that is your recap of everything that went down at UFC Vegas 108. Do you need to rewatch it? No. Don't go rewatch everything. You'll be all good. Don't worry on that. But I'll tell you what you do need to go rewatch. You do need to go rewatch none other than the best WWPLE I've seen all year. WWE SummerSlam. Guys, I kid you not. I want everyone to be wrestling fans. Because if you were able to experience how insane SummerSlam 2025 was, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Night one was crazy, but night two just utterly mind-blowing. So going down East Rutherford, New Jersey at MetLife Stadium. Night one, 53,000 in attendance. Night two, 60,000 in attendance for just under 114,000 in attendance. 113,722. This was action-packed. Massive event. The main event was John Cena versus Cody Rhodes on night two, and CM Punk versus Gunther on night number one. But with that, I'm not even going to waste any time. Let's dive right into our official recap of the event. It's rare that I end a episode talking about WWE ahead of UFC, but this was just way bigger than anything UFC Vegas 108 had to offer. So, kicking off night one, Roman Reigns and Jey Uso taking on Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. What a perfect match to open SummerSlam. If it wasn't going to main event, opening was a perfect opener. Now, I will say, crowd for this entire card, amazing. Amazing. Night one, night two, the crowd was amazing. The only downer is the fact, you know, MetLife is an open stadium, and this event started at 6 o'clock on the East Coast. The sun being out, it being sunny, kind of kills any aura you have from the lights coming out. It was really only the main events both nights where you were able to actually have matches in the dark, which makes the spectacle better, but that's just something that's unavoidable. When you start, you can't start the event at 9 o'clock at night. So that's just something that WWE has to work around. But nonetheless, Roman Reigns and Jey Uso still had fun entrances. And their match against Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed was utterly insane. There were some crazy spots in this match. Roman Reigns eating a spear from Bron Breakker. Roman Reigns and Bronson Reed both jumping through the turnbuckles over the top rope onto the outside was insane. And the story at the end of Roman sacrificing himself so Jey Uso could get the finish and get the pin was incredible. Roman Reigns and Jey Uso stand tall over Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. Just a great match. Just a great tag team match. And somehow, despite losing, Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed don't seem hurt at all by this. I don't know what they're going to do from here. They're definitely going to need to work something in these two. But all I know is Bron Breakker is the future of the WWE. You're watching a young John Cena and Randy Orton in 2002 with this. You are watching a young Shawn Michaels in the early 90s. You're watching Hunter Hearst Helmsley before he became Triple H. Bron Breakker is going to do incredible things in this business. Now, there is word that Roman Reigns is stepping away. You know, he's going to go film Street Fighter, which is weird that Cody Rhodes is doing the same. We're going to be talking about that in a bit, but I don't know what's going on with that. So he might be stepping away. So what is Jey Uso going to do? I think he's going to feud with the new World Heavyweight Champion, perhaps, or he could take as a feud with Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. I don't know, but I would love to see these guys kind of go their separate ways here. This was a great opener for SummerSlam, and if you want to go rewatch a match from SummerSlam, this would be one to start with. After that, we headed into the Women's Tag Team Championship matchup between the Judgment Day of Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez as they took on Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss. And 13-minute, 30-second match, Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss, amazing chemistry, get it done. They are your new WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. I absolutely love this. I thought this was a fantastic idea. You know, an entertaining matchup, yet another good fight, and running two tag team bouts back-to-back to open the show. Bold decision. Very bold. Worked well. Worked utterly, utterly well. And it was good. It was good. The finish was great. You see Charlotte Flair hitting a spear, Alexa Bliss hitting the end of days or kiss of death or whatever she calls it, similar to how Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt did it, which I absolutely loved back in, what was that, 2017, 2016, and they become your new WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. And similar to how Becky Lynch elevated the Women's IC Championship, these two are going to elevate the Women's Tag Team Division tenfold. I would love to see them defend this on PLEs in the future, Clash of Paris, Crown Jewel, Survivor Series, the Royal Rumble. You know, I would love to see that. These two, you know, they're going to tell a great story, and when they inevitably break up, like all tag teams do, I hope it is not like one becomes a heel, one becomes a face. They just have like this buddy cop, just, you know, they don't get along, they do get along. It's good. It's enjoyable. And the fact that we started the year with Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss where they were at in January to where they're at here at the start of August, it's incredible what the WWE storytellers and these two athletes can do. Amazing work here. For the Judgment Day, I would just love to see Liv Morgan return. She doesn't even have to wrestle. And I would love to see her kind of confront them like, oh, I leave and you lose the tag team belts. What's wrong with both of you? Something like that. But that's what's next. It's tough to say. You know, there's always going to be tag teams for them to feud with. I could see a starter feud, maybe being the Secret Hervis. They always love to do that. Maybe being the Kabuki Warriors, if you do that. There's even something I have an idea of, for Rhea Ripley and Io Sky teaming together. We can get to that later, perhaps. But I don't know. There are big things to add for the women's tag team division. After that, you had Sami Zayn defeating Karrion Kross, and if Karrion Kross had won, Sami Zayn would have had to admit that Kross was right, that Zayn was not a good person. But since Zayn won, Kross has to admit that he was wrong about Zayn. This match lasted 8 minutes and 10 seconds. It is the worst match of SummerSlam. It sucks. Kind of sucks we have a worst match, because as we look through the rest of the card, there really wasn't a match you could even say was bad. This was a bad match. For starters, there wasn't a stipulation. There should have been no DQ. Street fight. Extreme rules, no holds barred, should have at least even been like false count anywhere or something, but no, it was a third regular match between these two, and it sucked. It just sucked. You know, it feels like a waste of time. Everyone just wanted Karrion Kross to win. Like, no one wanted Sami Zayn to win, and they made him the underdog again, and people are saying he's the front runner for the Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia, and I'm just not a fan of Sami Zayn. I can acknowledge he's a great in-ring worker, he is a legend of the business, but I'm not a fan of him. None whatsoever. And I didn't cheer for him against Gunther. I didn't cheer for him when he took on Bron Breakker or Chad Gable. I am yet to cheer for Sami Zayn, except for when he was taking on Roman Reigns, and except for when him and Kevin Owens were teaming together against the Usos. That's the only time I've been cheering for Sami Zayn. But yeah, Karrion Kross might be on his way out. I think they've kind of buried him with this feud, which really sucks. That actually really hurts that they've buried him to death. So Sami Zayn, hate to say it, you're probably going to go on to big things, and for Karrion Kross, I really hate to say this, you're going to be cut from the UFC, I presume. I'd leave, though. Karrion Kross could be a stud in AEW, stud in, how about we send Karrion Kross down to freaking NXT? He could really put Obafemi over. You could even send him to TNA, win the TNA championship, but man, really sucks with this one. What's next? Sami Zayn will probably go after the World Heavyweight Championship or start to build himself up even more. I don't know. And honestly, I don't care. After that, the WWE Women's Championship, Tiffany Stratton and Jade Cargill. I'm so shocked that Tiffany retained. Nonetheless, I'm also shocked that this was a 7-minute match. This was the shortest match of SummerSlam, and it was one of the best. It was so good. These two did the best they could in the shortest amount of time, action-packed from the get-go. And Tiffany Stratton winning, honestly shocking me. Really did. You know, they had given Jade Cargill so much. She had returned to Elimination Chamber, won at WrestleMania, won the Queen of the Ring, won at WWE Evolution. I mean, they gave her a lot. They gave her a lot, and to have Tiffany beat her clean with her finisher, I mean, just kind of shocking. Kind of shocking, if you ask me. And honestly, Tiffany Stratton also kicked out of a massive, massive, I don't even know what Jade's finisher is called. The Jade Slayer. I have no idea, but she kicked out of that, and Tiffany Stratton remains your champion and is honestly one of the best workers in the business. I like what I've seen from Tiffany Stratton, if I'm being honest. For what's next for these two, it's tough to say. Tough to say if Bianca Belair returns to SmackDown. You could have that be a feud for Tiffany Stratton. For Jade Cargill, she could, I don't know, maybe they run this back. Actually, no, I don't think these two are done. I don't think these two are done. I think you could still have, there's probably more story to tell with both these women. So Tiffany and Jade, I think they have one more, maybe even two more matches. But for SummerSlam, Tiffany Stratton stands tall. And this is now two straight SummerSlams. Tiffany Stratton looking like a boss. I'm thinking, you know, she might become Miss SummerSlam. She's also for Briar Lake. She's also a baddie. So Tiffany Stratton, still your WWE Women's Champion. I was a bit shocked by it, but also I liked it. After that, our co-main event of the evening, Drew McIntyre, Logan Paul taking on Randy Orton and Jelly Roll, 17 minutes and 10 seconds, and look out, Bad Bunny, you may have one of the best celebrity ring workers of our generation. Jelly Roll is an absolute beauty. Was Randy Orton even in this match? You know, I didn't see this live. I watched all the highlights of this. I listened to analyses from Santi Zap on YouTube from my buddy Tyler, who I watched Night 2 with, on his thoughts on this. And no one has mentioned Randy Orton whatsoever. This was the Jelly Roll show. Jelly Roll hitting massive moves on Logan Paul and Drew McIntyre, eating a claymore from Drew McIntyre, eating a frog splash through the announce table as Logan Paul slams two pride bottles together. What in the world? He was the MVP of this matchup, and I would love to see Jelly Roll get more involved in the ring. It got him healthy, too. Look at 2022. Jelly Roll, that boy was a legit Jelly Roll. This boy is now a slim, fit Jelly Roll. You could call this a healthy Jelly Roll that you can eat. I mean, oh my goodness. Good work from all of these gentlemen. And nonetheless, Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul win, and they pin Jelly Roll. I love the swerve. It was apparently a last-minute swerve backstage. That's amazing. That is just utterly amazing. I love it. I absolutely love it. What's next for all these guys? Orton and Paul. I don't know. Randy Orton and Logan Paul can always disappear, come back. They're kind of interchangeable. For Drew McIntyre, I think he has a feud with the new WWE Champion, which we'll talk about in just a second. But Jelly Roll, you are absolutely amazing. I'm sure he has some tours to go on, some Hollywood, some music career stuff. But whenever you want to come back to the WWE, Jelly Roll, you come back. You are an absolutely amazing in-ring worker. And this was a perfect co-main event to have here. This was the perfect second-to-last matchup of the evening. For night one, this was amazing. With that, we dove into the final matchup, Winky Face of night number one, 30 minutes and 20 seconds of CM Punk versus Gunther for the World Heavyweight Championship. Now, I didn't watch the full 30 minutes, so I can't speak for it, but there's people that are divided on this, but this is your typical slow building matchup. And there's a lot to tell here, Okay, there's a lot to tell her. First off, this is how Gunther wrestles. Gunther breaks you down. Gunther does all of his stereotypical moves. This was almost 25 minutes Gunther, final 5 minutes Punk. That's the storytelling here. But to really get the whole aspect of this, we have to talk about, and if you have to know hindsight, is that there was going to be a Money in the Bank cash-in after this. So this was basically Gunther softening up CM Punk, explaining why CM Punk was so vulnerable after this matchup. And I actually came into this matchup in the final 5 minutes. Gunther dominating CM Punk outside the ring. He then is looking up at the World Heavyweight Championship. He's going, I'm the best in the world. This is mine. I'm the best. He gets up on the announce table. He's cheering at the crowd. CM Punk then swipes his legs. Gunther falls on the announce table, falls on the underside of the announce table, and just because it was actually a little meme that me and my buddy Tyler had for night two, and anyone ever fell on the other side of the announce table, there's sharp objects out there. When he comes up, Gunther's entire head is so bloody, and a lot of people are saying that Gunther didn't earn that blood. Maybe they're right, but who cares? CM Punk gets him back in, hits him with two go-to-sleeps, pins him, and becomes your new World Heavyweight Champion. An amazing matchup. From everything I've heard, it was an amazing matchup. The ending was super intense. You know, Gunther making you think he's going to submit CM Punk, then doesn't. And then CM Punk finally winning the World Heavyweight Championship was amazing. But then I was noticing, they're panning to CM Punk a little bit longer than they should have. You know, why aren't the credits rolling, Triple H? Why isn't that little logo appearing in the bottom left-hand portion of the screen? What is going on? And then as CM Punk is looking at his belt, as he holds it up to the crowd, burn it down, hits it, out walks Seth Rollins in his crutches. Paul Heyman holding his beautiful Money in the Bank Seth Rollins briefcase. And, you know, Seth Rollins warns him, you watch out, I'm coming for you. And then you see him start to go to the back. But then he pauses, and then he throws the crutches away. Oh my gosh, when I throw out the word cinema, when I throw out the word amazing, this is what I'm talking about. He then takes off his leg brace, grabs the briefcase, marches down, slides in the ring, starts beating CM Punk senseless with the briefcase. I mean, adding even more damage to an already damaged CM Punk. Hands in the briefcase, hits one curb stomp, and that is that. Pins him. Seth Rollins is your new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Holy cow. Holy cow, indeed. Triple H, you cooked on night one. And, you know, the online wrestling community, the IWC, the internet wrestling community, they are just toxic. They're toxic. Whoever is saying, like, oh, this was so predictable. I don't care if people say it was predictable. At the end of the day, actually seeing it come to fruition is never that predictable. It never really is. These are probably people that said, oh yeah, Brock Lesnar's going to end the streak. Oh, look at that. He ended it. No one could have called that. But the lengths they went to fake this injury, to make you think that Seth Rollins was incapable of cashing in for some time, and then for him to do a last-minute swerve, oh, it was so freaking good. You then see Braun come out with Paul Heyman, and it ends the show with this new faction, which might be called The Vision. That might be the new name of the faction. I don't know. Standing tall, man, there's a lot to go from here. So Gunther is going to be stepping away for some time, which I kind of like, because you really have nothing to do with Gunther except have him be the big bad villain for the World Heavyweight Championship. Like, that's really his role for the rest of time. He's going to be a world champion player. He injured his nose, so he's going to be stepping away for a while. But for CM Punk and Seth Rollins, this feud began. When CM Punk returned to the company, it is still going on. It's going to go on till the end of days. I don't know if these two go at it at Clash in Paris, if I'm being honest. I don't know if CM Punk is immediately thrown back into the feud if we have him step away, but we're going to have to see. Sami Zayn and Jey Uso are immediately two names that come to mind as first feuds for Seth Rollins in his second run as World Heavyweight Champion. So we're going to have to see where we go from here, but if we do run and we're on CM Punk versus Seth Rollins continually, I'm all for it. But this was amazing. Night one was perfect, and night two had a lot to live up to. And you know what Triple H said? You ain't seen nothing yet. And little did we know, we truly had seen nothing yet. As we get into night two, I watched the entire card. The entire card of night number two. And we kick things off. Naomi, Rhea Ripley, and Io Sky for the triple threat match for the Women's World Championship. A triple threat match, I'd say, for the Women's World Championship. 16 minutes, 20 seconds, just as I predicted. Right time span for this one. Naomi defeats Rhea Ripley and Io Sky. And, you know, it wasn't as good as the Women's Triple Threat WrestleMania. Wasn't as good as the stuff at Evolution, but it was still good. It was a decent opener. And the one thing with this card is that you were kind of taking on a roller coaster of emotions with this card. And the pacing at the end of the day, when we can look back at the entire night two of WrestleMania, was perfect. So them starting with, I wouldn't really say this was a slow match. It wasn't a fast-paced match. It was in the middle, leaning more towards faster paced, you know, but Rhea Ripley, Naomi, and Io Sky have great chemistry. They were going at it all over. There were some good spots in this, some hard-hitting spots. The big moment was a riptide off the top freaking rope, which then didn't even amount to anything. And then the finish was Rhea Ripley finally going to beat Io Sky. You know, there's this kind of the storyline they've been telling that Rhea Ripley cannot beat Io Sky. She can't pin Io Sky. She hits Io Sky with the riptide alone in the ring, goes to pin her. Naomi sneaks in behind her, does a little roll-up on Rhea, and escapes with the championship. Typical heel fashion. I really like it. And even in this, you know, matchup when I was mentioning maybe a tag team being formed with Rhea and Io Sky, you could see like at times they were working together that's like, oh wait, Naomi's taken out. Let's go at it. Let's wrestle. So I'm thinking if you want to have, you know, Rhea Ripley or Io Sky remain a challenger, you could do that. But I would love to see those two step away, have a feud with Charlotte and Alexa Bliss. You could even have Charlotte and Alexa Bliss retain against them. But we are going to Crown Jewel in October. Oh, yeah, I do want to say we're going to Crown Jewel in October, and we are going to Clash in Paris in the end of August. And Stephanie Vaquer is going to be challenging, I believe, Naomi at Clash in Paris. So what do you do with Io Sky and Rhea Ripley? In the meantime, a tag team division feud with Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss would be massive, and especially if Charlotte and Alexa Bliss come out of top on that, that would be great. So women's division, all three of these women are in for big things. They are the future of the company. Yeah, good hands and all for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, or the Women's World Championship, if you want to call it that. After this matchup, we dove into the TLC six-pack TLC match for the WWE Tag Team Championship. 16 minutes on the dot. It was, you know, it. So here's the thing. It was the best match. You know, it was how do I phrase this? So it wasn't the best match of the weekend. It was the most exciting match of the weekend. I think that's what this was, the most exciting matchup of the weekend. This is like when you have a fight of the night. So Cena versus Cody Rhodes was fight of the night on here, using UFC terms. This was a performance bonus of the night. This was utterly insane. This took any expectations you had for this matchup and exceeded them tenfold. Wyatt Six, Andrade and Rey Fénix, DIY, Fraxia, Motor City Machine Guns, and the Street Profits all going at it. The spots in this match were insane, and from the get-go, action-packed, and the spots here were insane, just so many hard-hitting spots. They had this immaculate spot where you had all eight guys, how many guys were in this? Were there eight guys? All 12 guys getting involved in something where someone was jumping off the top rope, threw someone through a table, and then you had this moment where Candice LeRae, the DIY, Johnny Gargano, and Tommaso Ciampa's, like, manager, if you will, getting in the ring, trying to, like, grab the titles for them, and she goes through from the top of a ladder, outside the ring, through another ladder. I thought she'd been cut in half. You then had, Bo Dallas getting involved in this, and him getting just slammed through a ladder. You then had DIY just going off the top rope through four tables off the top of a ladder. And there was this crazy spot where Tommaso Ciampa was hanging upside down on the belt as Nathan Frazier is going at it with Johnny Gargano. This matchup was insane. You know, people are saying there wasn't really an MVP. I thought Montez Ford was crazy entertaining throughout all this. He was fantastic. You had Eric Rowan getting involved in this. It was amazing. This entire TLC match was amazing, and this almost proves that you should always book this tag team division on a PLE. You really should, and the contrast between SmackDown's tag team division and Raw's tag team division is night and day, dare I say, pitch black and bright white. I mean, holy cow, they were so good. They were so good. The finish, you think that Andrade and Rey Fénix are going to shock the world and win, but no, Joe Gacy, Dexter Lumis sneak back in, hit their little finisher, climb up, and the Wyatt Six retain, which I'm not mad about at all. They had just won, 2 weeks ago? Makes sense that they would be able to retain right here. All these guys, all these tag teams are going to be amazing. I would love for this belt to just swap places around left, right, and center throughout the next few weeks. But I mean, this was a perfect matchup to have after, you know, the second matchup of the night. And it lit the crowd up. It lit the room up. The spots here had me jumping out of my seat. 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10 matchup. I love it. Give me more. Give me more every single PLE. I want a TLC six-pack ladder match between these six teams. They are utterly incredible. As for what feud could be next for the Wyatt Six, well, they ended with feuding off against Andrade and Rey Fénix. Let's just give them another opportunity at the belts. But good stuff all around for all 12 of these competitors. And hey, even to the women, B-Fab, Nikki Cross, and Cancel Rae, they all got involved. Bo Dallas, Eric Rowan got involved. Amazing work all around. After that, we got into the No DQ, No Countout last chance match for the WWE Women's Intercontinental Championship between Becky Lynch and Lara Valkyra. And if Becky Lynch won, Lara Valkyra could no longer challenge for the title as long as Becky Lynch is champion. And what do you know? Becky Lynch won. Yes, and this match was 25 minutes and 5 seconds. This match was way too long. It got to a point where, like, I'm looking at the time, I'm like, Tyler, this has been going on 15 minutes. He's like, oh, this is going to end soon. Tyler, this has been going on 19 minutes. Oh, it'll end soon. Tyler, this has been going on 22 minutes. Oh my gosh. Tyler, this has been going on 25 minutes. Holy cow. This was long. This was freaking long. And there were some blunders here. And I do think the one thing they're trying to do is up their Backlash and Money in the Bank matchups and the Raw matchups. But the thing that made those so good is it was just beautiful chain wrestling, nonstop action. Here, they were getting so many props involved. They were outside the ring for long periods of time. A lot of this was just Becky Lynch beating up Lyra Valkyra. And then Fiery Lyra gets something to go. And then Becky Lynch kicks out. And I don't know. It took a while for us to get to the finish. It was also kind of delayed of Bayley running out. Then Bayley goes to save Lyra Valkyra. Then she's going to do a heel turn. Then, you know, she goes to save Lyra Valkyra again. Instead, she hits Lyra Valkyra. Becky Lynch pins her. And that is that. Becky Lynch retained. So I don't really know where you go from here. I certainly think Becky Lynch and Lyra Valkyra's feud is completely done. I mean, it is because Lyra can't challenge anymore. But does Lyra go after a world championship now? Does she go after Tiffany Stratton's belt or something? Because Bayley and Becky Lynch is the next feud for the Women's IC Championship. And somehow, I don't know how WWE has done it. I'm going to be rooting for Bayley in this feud. I have no idea how WWE always gets me back on the Bayley train. They've got to be back on the Bayley train because Becky Lynch, amazing, amazing heel. And she had a new entrance, and I am not sold on it. The man has come around. Guys, who's defending that? Who's defending that? No one should be defending that. That is not a good entrance theme whatsoever. But this was a tinge too long, but to call it bad, it wasn't bad. It was just too long. It was a good match overall. And for being halfway through the card and having to follow up the TLC match, it did whatever it could. After that, the steel cage match for the WWE United States Championship between Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu. And I was kind of sold on Solo all week until I saw last few SmackDowns and I switched to Jacob Fatu. But Solo wins, 12-minute, 40-second match. I will say steel cage matches can, I think they're more of a SmackDown type of thing, more of a Raw type of thing. I will say just the fact that, like, the camera angles, they should put a camera in the cage because every angle has the chain link fence. And the way, like, the Elimination Chamber, Hell in a Cell, we have someone with a camera in the ring. I understand in person it sucks to watch, but that's just how it goes. And, you know, watching this one, it was just, you know, it was like, oh, Solo gets thrown into the cage. Oh, Fatu gets thrown into the cage. It was, you know, it was just kind of average. Kind of was. Then, of course, Tonga Loa runs out, Tala Tonga runs out, JC Pateo runs out, and they all get involved. Then Fatu fends them all off, and then there was this moment where Fatu was, Jimmy Uso ran out, I should say. Jimmy Uso ran out, and they gave him his theme song, which is just so dumb. It made no sense why he had a theme song, and the others didn't. But Tala Tonga, there was this moment where he put handcuffs on Jacob Fatu while Jacob Fatu was trying to climb out, and then Solo basically was able to just go into claw his way out, and then Fatu rips him off the cage. It was super odd. Then he goes to stop him, and then boom, big boot with Tala Tonga. Cage door hits Fatu. Fatu falls back, and Solo Sikoa wins again in his little dirty ways. And you're kind of like, oh, that's that? Okay. Match ends. Then Jason Mateo and Tonga Loa get in the cage. They're beating on Fatu. All of a sudden, Fatu wakes up. Solos them. No, just beats them both down. Then does a frog splash from the top of the cage onto both of them. And that was the big thing. And Fatu lost. Yep, Fatu was standing tall at the end. So I don't know if Fatu goes after a WWE championship. I almost don't feel like his feud with them is done. But Jimmy Uso's already challenged. So I don't really know what you do here. You know, I'm really torn. I'm actually really torn. Do you get Randy Orton involved in this? I don't really know. So kind of up in the air what to do with the bloodline, but Jacob Fatu is still a stud. Sol Sikoa is still your United States champion. This was okay. It wasn't bad, but it was certainly kind of just like, oh, this happened? So yeah, steel cage match for the WWE Championship. It is what it is. After that, the second to last matchup of the evening, Dirty Dominic Mysterio defending his Intercontinental Championship against AJ Styles. Match went 10 minutes and 45 seconds, and it was good. It was good. You did not have any interferences. You had AJ Styles coming out in Eddie Guerrero gear with his son riding shotgun. He's doing the thing. He's riding through the crowd. This was perfect. And these two delivered. 10 minutes, 45 seconds of just pure chain grappling. Dominic Mysterio using Eddie Guerrero tactics, using the high flying of Rey Mysterio. He's a star, man. He is a star. I can't wait till we give Dirty Dominic Mysterio the WWE Championship. Actually, World Heavyweight Championship. He'd look really good with the World Heavyweight Championship strapped around him. I mean, this was good. This was good. And then you had this. The funniest thing, though, is that AJ Styles kept trying to get Dominic Mysterio disqualified, which wouldn't have made sense because he would have lost the match by disqualification and wouldn't have won the belt. I thought that was hilarious. But Dominic Mysterio uses some tactics, which we don't see until after the match, of him undoing his boot, which makes it think like AJ Styles took off his boot. He then uses that boot to hit AJ Styles, hit a frog splash. That is that. And Dominic Mysterio retains clean. And cleanish, we should say. But good stuff from Dominic Mysterio. This should end their feud. I do hate seeing AJ lose. You know, I really don't like seeing AJ Styles lose, but I do still think you could get AJ Styles and John Cena at Crown Jewel at Survivor Series. I mean, Survivor Series, so up in the air. So up in the air about what's going on at Survivor Series. I don't think anyone has a clue, but Dirty Dom, I think him and Finn Balor is going to be a hit feud when that goes down, but we didn't see any Judgment Day whatsoever. You allowed Dominic Mysterio to thrive on his own. He didn't even need a Liv Morgan interference. This was fun, and this was the perfect matchup to do right before the main event. And a main event this was indeed. I don't even know what to say about this. I really don't. This was insane. Insane. John Cena defending the undisputed WWE Championship against Cody Rhodes' street fight went 37 minutes and 45 seconds, and it didn't even feel that long. Okay, when I'm trying to, this, by the way, this did so much justice to the WrestleMania match that this might be the best wrestling main event I've seen since WrestleMania 40. I kid you not, this was incredible. I think I'm going to say this is the best main event I've seen since WrestleMania 40. This was insane. This is one of the greatest matchups I've had the privilege of watching. John Cena's final SummerSlam match, and this felt like WrestleMania. Okay, SummerSlam Night 2 felt like what WrestleMania Night 2 should have been. WrestleMania Night 1 compared to SummerSlam Night 1, you know, I think WrestleMania Night 1 still felt like WrestleMania, but WrestleMania Night 2, nowhere near as good as SummerSlam Night 2. Nowhere near as good, especially Cody Rhodes versus John Cena. And what I loved is, you know, by the way, I just kind of knew from when Cody Rhodes walked out, he was probably going to be winning this championship, which, by the way, he did. But, I mean, just, he comes out with, like, some quote from Dusty Rhodes, his dad. He comes out with this new mask on that just looks badass. Oh, it was so good. He's coming through the mist. Utterly amazing. He walks down. It's go time. And then John Cena's music hits. And you just see the black John Cena. And you're like, oh, I guess he hasn't changed. And then boom, the entire screen lights up. And it's red, white, and blue. And John Cena comes out revving up the crowd. And this is the John Cena version we should have had the entire time. Okay? This, not necessarily a heel John Cena, but an intense John Cena. John Cena that wasn't doing cheap moves per se, but wasn't backing down from anything. When he had an opportunity to use something, when he could do a ferocious move, he had this intense look in his face. This is the best version of John Cena I've seen all year. Better than Money in the Bank, but better than Chamber, better than the Royal Rumble, better than WrestleMania. This is the best version I've seen of John Cena. It was incredible. He comes down. He's still cocky. He's still confident, but not like a smug way, more like of, yeah, I'm the 17-time world champion, that's me. Oh my gosh, so freaking good. Match gets going right off the bat. Action-packed. I mean, I looked up at the clock, 20 minutes had gone by, and I'm like, this is action-packed. They're going outside through everything. They're using chairs, they're using Oh my gosh, what's it called? The steel steps. They're brawling around. It took them like 25 minutes for them to begin brawling around the arena. There were multiple moments where they both went down, and you're like, is someone going to come out? And no one came out. And then one of my favorite shots of this is that they're brawling around the arena. Then they go like under the stage, and then Cody Rhodes's platform that he rises up on comes up, and it's John Cena holding a lifeless Cody Rhodes as the smoke goes around him. He has this grin on his face. Oh my gosh, it was so good. The amount of finishers you had here, you had some of the craziest finishes. You had John Cena sending Cody Rhodes off of one announce table through the other. You had John Cena doing a super AA off the top rope after already giving him two AAs and Cody Rhodes still kicking out. But the best kick out of them all, Cody Rhodes hit, I think it would have been his fourth Cody, a crossroads. He hit three crossroads in a row after having previously hit one. And it was really like, oh my gosh, this is it. One, two, and he kicked out, and the crowd went ballistic. I mean, the crowd was just SummerSlam crowd. I mean, we should go back to MetLife every single year. They did so much justice to this card. It was amazing. We then finally get into the final segments of this matchup, and John Cena trying all he can. Finally, he sets up a table, but then Cody reverses it, hits a super Cody cutter through the table, which alone could have ended it. He then watches as John Cena struggles to get up the ropes. He gives him one final salute, hits one last Cody cutter, and pins, or crossroads, I should say, and pins him, and Cody Rhodes is your new undisputed WWE champion. I kind of looked at Tom like, dang, that's that. Wow. He won. I mean, it didn't really feel like it was this big, like, looking back, it was a triumphant finish, but kind of watch it, there had just been so much going on, you're kind of like, dang, John Cena just lost. That was that, and man, it was something. It was something. Just the fact that they gave them 37 minutes to just do all their work, it was amazing. And then Cody Rhodes and John Cena shake hands. You see this new version of John Cena just kind of realizing, like, this is what it's all about, the fans. And Cody Rhodes and him, you know, hugging, shaking hands. I mean, it was great. And then Cody Rhodes gives him one final salute. You know, John Cena raises his hand, and Cody Rhodes walks up the ramp, goes away, and John Cena is soaking it in. He's looking around. He's like, you know what? Final SummerSlam, MetLife. This is amazing, guys. As he walks over to the ropes to leave the ropes, I mean, guess whose theme music hits? Brock Lesnar. And out comes Brock freaking Lesnar. The crowd, the pop. This is the greatest return. This is the greatest return in so long. No one saw this coming. Tyler was with me. He predicted Brock Lesnar. How did you do that? How did Tyler predict Brock Lesnar? Brock Lesnar was nowhere near on my radar. This was insane. And out comes Brock sporting a ponytail, sporting a cowboy hat with a feather in it. The cutoff, he is looking more jacked than when he left. And oh my gosh, the place is going nuts. And you just see this look of horror on John Cena's face. Brock comes down to the ring. He's kind of walking around, stalking. Then he gets in. John Cena goes to hit him. He ducks, hits him with a nasty F5. And yeah, clash in freaking Paris. John Cena, Brock Lesnar. How did you do this? How were you able to have John Cena lose at SummerSlam and then get me more excited about him than Cody Rhodes? Insane, insane. They are going to run John Cena versus Brock Lesnar next. This feud is going to cook. And John Cena either has 12 or 13 more dates. I think it might be 12. And that's not a lot. But also when you think about it, whenever they have his final Saturday night's main event, which is probably going to be in December, you kind of think about it. If he has 12 dates, there's Crown Jewel. There's Clash in Paris. There's that Saturday night's main event. There's Survivor Series. That's 4, which means you're going to get John Cena on 8 Raw and SmackDowns, which is pretty much a rare occurrence. Now, I will say you're easily going to need him twice in the next few weeks, which is going to bring us down to 6 between September, October, November. I don't know what you're going to do with John Cena, actually. This is going to be very interesting, but Brock Lesnar ended the show. People were saying that this Brock Lesnar return overshadowed the match. Not at all. I would even argue it elevated this from a 10 out of 10 to an 11 out of 10. I mean, this was incredible. It's incredible. That was one of the greatest nights of professional wrestling I have watched. I mean, it's like every match built on each other in the main event for the whole main event segment being a 50-minute series with the entrances, with the return, with the match itself. It was amazing. It was utterly amazing. SummerSlam 2025, 10 out of 10. It was amazing. It was amazing. I see what Triple H can do when he can, like, cook really well. I mean, this man can put out banger events. So, yeah, SummerSlam 2025, it was iconic, it was amazing, and I'm so pumped for next year when it's in mini freaking Minneapolis, and you already bet Brock Lesnar's going to be back for probably his retirement match in Minneapolis. So yeah, I need a job, boys, I need to get in my bag, saving my money, because I'm going to go broke getting me some tickets to that thing. But amazing work for, SummerSlam. Great, great work. The next time we're on a WWE PLE, the next time you hear me doing WWE predictions of any kind, it's going to be Clash in Paris going down August 31st on a Sunday. I presume it's going to be midday. And the promotional poster right now has Cody Rhodes, Gunther, Tiffany Stratton, John Cena, CM Punk, Seth Rollins, Bianca Belair, Jacob Fatu, Jey Uso, Rey Mysterio, Penta, Rhea Ripley, and Charlotte Flair. So if I'm going off of that promotional poster, and when I look at the actual matches booked, so Naomi versus Steffi Vacare is a lock. That's a lock. Tiffany Stratton, Jade Cargill, let's run that back. CM Punk versus Seth Rollins, let's do that. We can then do John Cena versus Brock Lesnar, and then, honestly, Cody Rhodes might not be defending this belt for a minute, but if you get Cody Rhodes versus Drew McIntyre on there too, Clash of Paris might be one of the best events of the year. But, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I have for today. Like I said, SummerSlam was freaking incredible. It is the greatest event that I may have seen since WrestleMania 40. I mean, it was awesome. It was freaking awesome. So we'll be back next time to cover UFC Vegas 109. Who knows if there'll be anything else to talk about in the world. Maybe I'll watch a movie or something. But I am trying to plan a YouTube video where I rank every MCU film, all 37 of them. So we'll see if I get to that this week. Actually, I will get to that this week. We're going to use progressive talk, or should I say actionable talk? I don't know. But ladies and gentlemen, I'll stop rambling. It was an absolutely fantastic weekend of fun, and I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.